Phillips. Our next case, as parties are assembling, is A22-1293, Accredited Electrical Solutions LLC versus Pinpoint Homes LLC et al. Appellants over there, respondents over there. I think. Yes, I am right. So, as you're getting seated, as I'm sure all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Respondent will have 15 minutes, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Whenever you are ready, appellant, counsel, just approach the microphone. You can adjust the podium up and down and just begin by telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Good morning. I'm James Anderson. I'm the attorney for the appellant, Pinpoint Homes, LLC. And so just to start with a little background, I'm sure you've had opportunity to read the briefs, so I won't go into a lot of it, but it's a relatively simple fact case. My client, Pinpoint Homes, is in the business of purchasing distressed properties, rehabbing them, and selling them on the market. My client purchased a home at 368 Warwick Street in St. Paul, engaged a company by the name of Day Construction, LLC, who was a third-party defendant in the district court case, but not involved in this appeal. Day Construction, in turn, engaged the respondent here, the plaintiff in the district court case, Accredited Electrical Solutions, LLC, to do the electrical work on the rehab project. The project started and about approximately halfway through, and most of the rough-in work was done, as they call it. Day Construction left the job, not sure exactly what happened there, disagreement with my client and Day or whatever, but Accredited Electric also left the job at the same time, so the job was unfinished. In the beginning, Accredited, the electrical company, had given an estimate of $16,427.83 to do all of this electrical work. There was my client via Day Construction, and I'll get into that relationship later in my argument, but anyway, the Accredited was paid approximately half of $8,213.95 for the work that had been completed up to that point.
Mr. Anderson, just an overall question for you. Since we don't interfere with the judge's findings, credibility findings, and so forth, there was an exchange with the owner of Accredited about the discrepancy between the items listed on that invoice and the $4,000 and not getting all the work done. But if we look at the overall picture based on the differencing of the testimony, there seemed like there was no dispute that all the work wasn't done, but the work that was done wasn't paid for. Would that be a fair overall summary of what the court heard from the testimony and therefore made the finding that $4,000 plus some dollars of work hadn't been paid for?
I would say that's not a fair assessment because there was never an accounting made by Accredited as to what they did. Nothing was ever provided either throughout the whole process, right through discovery and everything. Accredited never accounted to Pinpoint what exactly work was completed. It was a guesstimate by them what they thought they did. And the only—
Did he testify, though, and he did the work, right? So wouldn't that be sufficient for the judge to make that finding? And
I don't think so, Your Honor. I mean, if I do work for somebody, I send them an hourly bill and say, this is what I did. If I just sent them a bill and said, you know what, I think I took care of three quarters of your case, am I going to win any money on that, or should I? Am I meeting my burden of proof by that? I think everyone's entitled to an accounting, whether you're a person buying and selling homes or whatever. I think to meet your burden of proof, you got to prove you did the work. And all he said, and it was in his
book. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but and I don't know if this is in the record, but I mean, presumably, well, were the I've forgotten their names, the husband and wife, were they deposed?
McGill's? Yes. No, they were not.
So I mean, in and I recognize the dollar value of this case, but I mean, one way to deal with that is to haul them into a deposition, pull out the invoice, and have them check which ones did you do, which ones did you not do, and then, you know, you can get them on, well, you know, this 4,200 is that. I mean, I realize, you know, that was probably not within the scheme of things a likely scenario in this, but following up on Judge Sleater's excellent question, you know, it's preponderance of the evidence. You're right. They didn't, you know, there's no sort of like, well, here are the five things that we did do that we weren't paid for, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That didn't happen. But there is testimony that they did go through it and, you know, in their heads, as they said, came up with the number. And why isn't that enough? I mean, it'd be one thing if there wasn't that testimony and somehow the district court comes up with $4,200 based on this 8-page invoice and just decides, well, that's the number, then I think there's a problem. But if there is testimony that, yep, we came up with it and, you know, we didn't check the line items on the invoice, but we came up with it, I mean, you know, isn't that sort of good enough for government?
Well, maybe that's exactly what it is, and we know we don't accept that from the government. So, you know,
well,
it's not
good
enough. Well,
but do we accept that from a court trial based on findings with some evidence to support it?
I guess I don't. I think my client was entitled to a reckoning of this, an accounting of exactly what was done and what was not done. And that never happened other than a one line
in
the whole court.
You know, in cross-examination, you could have taken out, and I mean, I don't know what happened, I wasn't there, but you could have taken out the 8-page invoice and go line by line. Was this completed? Was this not completed? Was this completed? Was that not completed? And then when they finally say this was completed, okay, was this, you know, how much is this? How much is that? I mean, you know, that could have happened, right?
Well, that actually did happen, except that I had examination of my client who did that, and the credited Mr. McGill admitted that he didn't do those things and that his invoice was incorrect. So I don't see why my client has the burden of proving their case. I mean, that's what you're asking my client to do, go take a deposition of somebody so that they can now give us the right information. At this point, my client is X thousand dollars into this thing. I just don't think
it's his obligation. I get it. There's a cost-benefit analysis as to what you're going to do. That's a fair statement, Mr. Anderson.
Okay. Yeah, I don't mean to be argumentative, but I think that's what we do here. So
feel free. Everyone else is.
Okay, great.
And that's why we call oral argument.
Okay. Thank you. So at any rate, that basically, I probably don't need to go back over the facts on that part of the case because that's exactly what happened. And my client to this day doesn't have an accounting of what happened. That's just not there, and I don't think that, and I think that the judge kind of looked at the parties and went, well, you know, nobody likes house flippers for some reason, and I think they do a great thing for the community. I think they take a distressed property, improve it, and I just think there's a bias against them, and I think that was part of the problem there, but of course that's not the record or anywhere, but that's my feeling is what happened was all this poor electrician, which he's got a good business, and I don't think he's poor. So, okay, so moving on. The second issue, so at any rate, in summary there, I think that the court was clearly erroneous. Accredited did not meet their burden of proving exactly what was owed, or if anything else was owed, because they were paid over $8,000. The second issue is whether there was a requirement for a pre-lien notice. Minnesota Statute 514.011 requires subcontractors to give a pre-lien notice. And in this case, the Day Construction was actually a general contractor on the job who did the work and hired, accredited as a subcontractor. All the bills were sent to Day Construction. Day Construction found accredited to work on the property. Day Construction pulled all the permits. Admittedly, Pinpoint did pay accredited directly, but that was an accounting situation because Day Construction had no money, which turned out to why they walked off the job, or at least part of it. Yes, sir.
Anderson, I was going to ask you that. That was part of the evidence I had thought I saw in the court made findings that your client paid the first invoice. And secondly, did not the court make a finding that the contract to do the work was with your client, not with Day? And hence, wouldn't that be the take it out of the pre-lien notice requirement, except for a party under direct contract with the owner?
It would be, Your Honor, if that's what the facts added up to. We don't think it did. But
so are you making sort of a separate clear error argument on that, that that's an erroneous finding by the court that we would not find anywhere in the record?
That's correct. If you go into the record, there was testimony and exhibits admitted that showed Day Construction as the general contractor because they pulled the permits. Day Construction contacted, accredited, answered to Day Construction on the day-to-day project.
That almost seems like a somewhat separate issue. In some cases where a general contract, you might do your contracting through the general contractor, but my understanding of the court's findings is it was with the owner, not with the contract with Day Construction.
That's what the court found. You are correct.
So,
but
and assuming that that's not clear error, doesn't that take it out of the pre-lien notice requirement?
If that, we think it is clear error, but if it's not clear error, then you are correct. No pre-lien notice would have been required.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. In summary, I just don't think, and it's our position, that the court was clearly erroneous in the finding that accredited met its burden of proving that the amount owed is what was owed and what work was done. And the fact that their QuickBooks didn't work and that they had to get together and put their heads together, he and his spouse, to figure out what the bill is without an accurate accounting, certainly would make that burden of proof not met. And then I guess on the latter thing, we believe that our position is that Day Construction did contract with accredited as a subcontractor, and a pre-lien notice should have been given. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Anderson. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
All right. May it please the court. I'm Scott Peitzer, and I represent Accredited Electrical, the respondent in this case. Your Honors, this is a straightforward case. The appellant here is attempting to relitigate facts on appeal when the record supports the findings. There's more than enough evidence in the record to at least get over the standard of clear error, including explicit credibility determinations on the issues that are being raised. As far as the
Mr. Peitzer, you got my attention. We said just clear the hurdle. So you're agreeing, and Judge Connolly was asking this question too, that perhaps barely by these findings of the record, because it wasn't real clear on this invoice and what work, but your point being is that the hurdle has just been made?
I don't know whether I could comment on how much the hurdle has been cleared by, but it has been clear. It has been cleared.
Mr. Peitzer, was there, I don't see in the addendum, was there a signed contract between Pinpoint and Accredited Electrical Solutions?
That I am not entirely clear on. I was not trial counsel on this case, and
was, because I notice, because I mean that would end the issue. I mean, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But my only concern is in looking at the invoices that are attached to the addendum, it says bill to day construction, as opposed to bill to Pinpoint Homes. What are we to do about that?
My understanding of that is that because day construction was essentially hired as a construction manager to deal with the day-to-day operations of the construction. And the bills were sent initially to them to review to see whether the work that had been billed was in fact completed. Day construction then forwarded those on to be paid by Pinpoint. So day construction essentially was acting as kind of a middle management here, just kind of on the floor supervisor. And then the ultimate authority to pay those bills and to approve whether they should be paid based on the recommendation of day was Pinpoint's. So it was
Now, Day, Pinpoint Homes, I mean, they're a developer, right?
Correct.
Okay, so they're not, Ma and Pa who were having, a new roof put on the house.
Correct. They have a sophisticated corporate structure, as the district court pointed out.
So is your argument on pre-lien notice is that they didn't need pre-lien notice because there was a contract between Pinpoint and Accredited Electrical, or is your argument, as the district court sort of went on and on about, defendant Pinpoint is not the unsuspecting or unwary homeowner. Instead, defendant Pinpoint Homes is on an equal or superior footing with subcontractors like plaintiff. Is it both or is it either?
It's both, Your Honor. Okay. Our argument is that they were, in fact, there was a direct contract between Accredited Electrical and Pinpoint. And really, there's two exceptions that apply. There's the one
which is not in the record. Which is not in the record. I didn't see a written contract between Pinpoint and Accredited Electrical. Would that be a fair statement?
I did not see a written contract in the record either. However,
so how do I know there is one? Is it just Pinpoint called Accredited Electrical and said, "Do the electrical bill as bill for time and materials"? I mean, is that in the record?
That is my understanding. I would have to go back and look at the testimony for that, but I believe it was an oral contract. But I would have to go back and check on that to
confirm.
Fair enough.
That's all right. Go ahead.
So the district court found that there was a direct contract between Accredited Electrical and Pinpoint, and they also found which is a separate exception in the statute, that they were substantially the same person, contractor and owner of the property, which is an additional exception for the pre-lien notice. I believe subsection 4A or subdivision 4A, which the district court made findings on as well.
Repeat that. But who's essentially the same person? I thought we're dealing with three separate corporate entities between your client and the appellant, and then Day Construction.
The district court found that the owner of the property in question and the contractor of the for the work were both Pinpoint Homes, that they're the same person for purposes of whether the contractor is managed or controlled by substantially the same persons who manage or control the owner of the improved real estate.
Okay, so you're not talking about Day Construction. Those findings, I was a little confused when the whole point being is that Day was completely separate when they were in the picture from either your client or Pinpoint.
Correct.
But your point being because of the multiple layers of corporate entities that all we shorten up to Pinpoint, that's what you're referring to, the judge made those findings?
Correct.
I see. Thank you.
And so the judge, when the district court found that Pinpoint was a sophisticated developer as opposed to a homeowner, it wasn't so much a substantive conclusion as it was the reasoning that these statutory exceptions are being applied consistently with the purpose of those exceptions, that those exceptions were not meant for contractors to be able to take advantage of, an individual person just remodeling their house, but rather where the contractor, or rather where the owner is a sophisticated party who is acting as their own general contractor, as a developer here.
And just so that I'm clear, there is no written contract either between Day Construction and Accredited Electrical Solutions, correct?
That is my understanding.
Okay. All right.
Now, as far as the accounting goes, I think that there's sufficient evidence from the redirect of Matthew McGill to sustain the findings. Mr. McGill testified that only the items that were completed were included in that $4,200 figure. There's no requirement to give a detailed accounting. That would go to credibility. It would certainly have been would have been better for there to be a line by line explanation of what was completed and what wasn't. But in theory,
What if it was $10 million? What if the testimony was, my wife and I looked over the bills, and by God, it's $10 million. Do you think that'd be enough?
I think in terms of sustaining it for clear error, then yes. In terms of a practical matter, I think that would go to credibility. If they were saying, oh yeah, we just kind of casually came up with this number for a very large number, the district court may have found it not credible. But here, it was a much smaller number. The district court explicitly found Mr. McGill's testimony to be credible, including on redirect, where he clearly explained that as an artifact of the accounting software that they were using, there were items that were both billed and completed, but also items that were not completed but not billed. So the items, the $4,200 represents a subset of those items that were on the invoice.
Yeah, I want to make sure I understand that. I thought, well, you tell me if I'm wrong. I thought the invoice represented all the work that was requested. And they were paid for $8,000, around $8,000, which is some of the work that was completed. And then the invoice has all the other work that was or was not completed. And their testimony is, of the remaining work that was completed, we billed that, but we weren't paid for it. And that's what they're saying. All the work that was requested is on the invoice. And the universe that they're saying is, we got paid for some of the work that's on the invoice that we did, but we didn't get paid for some of the work that's in the invoice that we also did. And that number is 4,000. Is that the way I should be looking at this? Or we should be looking at this?
I believe so. I think that's, if I'm understanding your question correctly, I believe so, that there are items on the, because the original bill, or it was created for the estimate, which was the first stage of it, has everything. Some of those items were paid for, in that.
And done.
And done. And then some of those items were done but not paid for. And then some of those items were neither done nor paid for.
But that the universe contains the whole universe. I mean, there is nothing out there that was requested, done, not billed, that is not on the invoice. There's not some other thing. Oh, and by the way, we also, put in, the outlet. That's not on the invoice, but we did it anyway, and we didn't get paid for it. There's nothing like that, correct?
That's my understanding, correct.
I got it.
All right.
I think.
And there's no requirement for a formal accounting here. In theory, although it probably would have changed the determination of credibility, Mr. McGill could have written on a cocktail napkin the amount that has been paid for, or the amount that you still owe us for, is $4,200. That probably would have been a lot less credible, but that's not what happened. The district court found that that his explanation on redirect was credible, and that should be enough to affirm.
I think we got it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peitzer. Mr. Anderson, you'll have the last word, sir.
In answer to your question, and I was a trial lawyer, there was no signed contract between Pinpoint and Accredited. It was done based upon the presentation of that invoice. And
will you be advising that contracts be used prospectively?
I think if written contracts were done on all of the, what went on in all of these cases, we probably wouldn't be here. So unfortunately, I think there was a
lesson learned.
There was a course of dealing with some of these parties, and then they got lax. So that's where we're at.
Fine. Our recordings are all available to the public, including your clients. So
Okay.
Well, yes. I can assure you, Mr. Anderson, we've had cases where there are written contracts in commercial construction, and by God, there's still disputes about what's going on, who got paid for what. So, it's better than not, but it doesn't solve all problems.
I'm sure that's true. And kind of going back to your question, Judge Connolly, Mr. McGill at the trial could have gone through that invoice and testified as to exactly what was on that invoice that he did, and he didn't do it. Because I don't think he knew, but we're surmising to that. So he had the opportunity right there at trial to go through and say what was done. And I guess the only other thing I'll add is that it keeps coming up that my client was a sophisticated owner and therefore no pre-lien notice was required. And maybe that's helps in making a decision, but there's no exception for that in the statute or case law. So
that's a fair point. You're right.
So they can't rely on that. Okay. That's all I have. So
thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Anderson. Thank you very much, Mr. Peitzer. The matter is submitted. We will be issuing a written decision within 90 days.
Thank you for your time.